to 1,000 more federal agents are going to Minnesota. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News, where days of anti-ICE protests have raged, and they've spread nationwide.
We want justice!
That's in Los Angeles. Angry over last week's shooting that left a woman dead when Homeland Security maintained she drove toward an immigration agent. Fox's Matt Finn reports from Minneapolis.
There's also video showing the final moments leading up to Renee Good's shooting death. Video appears to show Renee Good's SUV parked in the street, apparently taunting officers, honking the horn, and dancing in the driver's seat. Now, during a ride-along with Border Patrol here in Minneapolis, I saw anti-ICE protesters using strikingly similar tactics. Cars trailing agents for miles, drivers slamming on their horn, and the driver of one silver car blocking in agents. At one point, Border Patrol warned two women to stop trailing them.
In another protest in L.A., someone drove a U-Haul truck into a crowd of anti-Iran demonstrators. But Fox's William Lajeunesse reports no one was seriously injured.
People tried to clear the road. Others converged on the truck, jumping on the running boards to open the door. One got on the roof, then climbed onto the hood, smashing the front windshield. Others attacked the driver with a flagpole through the passenger window.
Police took that driver into custody. In Iran, there's been a big demonstration against the U.S. chanting death to America, countering the days of protests against Iran's regime, leading to a crackdown that human rights groups report has left more than 500 people dead. President Trump has threatened to take action, telling reporters Iran wants to negotiate, but
we're looking at it very seriously. The military is looking at it, and we're looking at some very strong options.
The Federal Reserve Chairman, the president, has long criticized for not cutting interest rates enough, is now under federal investigation over Jerome Powell's testimony to Congress over Fed building renovations. Powell's response:
in every case, I have carried out my duties without political fear or favor.
America's listening to Fox News.
Relief Factor loves hearing from pain-free customers and hopes that you're going to be the next that writes in. Kim wrote in and said, "Before trying Relief Factor, Glenn, I struggled just to make it through my work days. I'd collapse on the couch at night, aching everywhere. Within a few weeks of starting Relief Factor, that daily pain began to fade. Now, I'm keeping up at work. I still have energy left for my family. My life has changed." Kim's is the story of thousands of kitchens and office desks and factory floors. The story of parents having more love to give because they have strength to share it. Relief Factor doesn't just ease pain, it restores your evening, your laughter, and the simple joy of just being present. Relief Factor has given me a big part of my life back, whether in the cold and elevation of our ranch or walks along the beaches with my wife in Florida. Relief Factor is 100% drug-free and targets the inflammation that causes pain so you can move better and feel better and actually enjoy life again. Try their 3-week quick start, $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com, 1-800-4-RELIEF, 1-800-4-RELIEF, and see if you're not the next to...
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Madeline Murray. A peaceful protest was held in Yuma over the weekend at the site of a recent hit and run. Family and friends of Mariela Acosta gathered near the intersection of South Avenue B and West County 14th Street. Acosta was killed in a hit and run in December at the age of 21. The person responsible for the hit and run turned himself in and went to court, but was released because no charges were filed. Now, the family is looking for resolution. The hit and run took place on the early morning of December 6th. And over the weekend, Yuma County residents kicked off the Relay for Life season with participation in hashtag First Lap. Attendees took a ceremonial first lap in honor of cancer patients and survivors. The event started at 11 a.m. at Inca Lanes, where after the lap, participants could register to sign up for a bowling tournament for $25. Proceeds from registering will go towards Relay for Life for Yuma County. Catch us on the TV side on News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local news, weather, and sports.
Well, if you hate windy days, this is not your week. Mostly sunny wind gusts out of the north at 15 to 25, maybe stronger today, 73 the high. Clear and 50 tonight. Sunny and north winds at 10 to 20 tomorrow, 77 the high, 50 on Tuesday night. And then for Wednesday, mostly sunny and 81 with calmer winds that day.
What is your healing power? Maybe your healing power is helping veterans with PTSD, traumatic brain injuries, depression, anxiety, or loneliness. Is your healing power a simple, heartfelt letter or being a volunteer? It is estimated that over 500,000 current warfighters will return from service diagnosed with PTSD, and 22 veterans will commit suicide every day. Our veterans have paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country. At HealVets.org, you can find out more about the healing power of pen pals, volunteers, therapy kits, and more. Discover your healing power at HealVets.org. Help Heal Veterans, together with you, has been helping one recovering veteran at a time. We are helping veterans heal together. What is your healing power? To find out about your power, visit healvets.org. This PSA is sponsored by Help Heal Veterans.
If you're the owner and or operator of a local business and want to continue to hear the right talk, please consider advertising on KBLU. Your advertising dollars are the gasoline for the Clark, Kilmeade, Hannity, Beck engine. Without your support, the old 560 just won't roll. Reach out to like-minded folks, the Patriots listening to this legendary radio station. When you do, you can invite new customers in and remind regulars to visit more often. And most importantly, keep the programming you love on 560 KBLU.
Wildlife around the globe needs help, and when you help protect them, you become a friend of the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance.
Thank you for being a friend.
Travel down the road and back again.
Your heart is true, you're a pal and a confidant.
Thank you for helping protect wildlife around the globe. Without you, there's no them. Learn more at sdzwa.org/friend.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Guys who wear this were big in the 70s, I think.
I think it reminds me of something you'd see on, like, show up in, like, Wyoming with Kevin Costner.
Oh, oh. Yellowstone.
Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like high-class rancher going on here.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know. Playing with some Western stuff.
All hat, no cattle.
Yeah. Pretty much. That's me. There's a fun Instagram hips. What is it? Hipsters of Bozeman. Is that what it is? Something like that. And it's all these like California and people that move to Montana. And so they're living out their cosplay dreams. And,
yeah.
You know, and just they have pictures of them at like restaurants and stuff. And they're like at Bubba's, but like in like fur coats and boots and $3,000 hats and.
Of Dumb and Dumber, you know, when they get all dressed up to go like Aspen.
That's
I love it so
That's
much.
Exactly what they look like. Like the women are wearing big boots that are all furry and it's pretty funny.
That's where it is. That's how it is up in your hometown now.
In Idaho.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sandpoint, Coeur d'Alene.
Yeah.
It's all the posh.
Yeah. There are the real naturalists or the natives that have grown up there. And, you know, they're eking out a living in their single wide trailers and working, you know, 60 hour weeks. And then there's those that come up with the California money and are buying up the mansions and, you know, dictating what goes on in downtown Main Street. And there's kind of a civil war up there. They hate them. You know, they have stickers on their license plates or on their bumpers that say, welcome to Idaho, but have a nice trip back to California.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's like, don't California my Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just speaking to a lady last week, actually, from Idaho, and she was talking about how it's very, very common for cars to be like keyed in the parking lots that have California plates up there. Like, it's a big deal. That's funny that you coined it like it's a civil war.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no, they don't like it. That was the case when I lived up there back in the late 80s and 90s.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a new thing.
No, it's not new at all, but it's becoming more prevalent. Yeah. It's just there are two different classes. There is the, like I say, the native class that grew up working in the mills and I don't know what other types of industries are really up there as far as the natural resources, but it was, it seemed to be the mills, the ski resort, which that's a tourist attraction, and the downtown tourist attraction, which is t-shirts and furniture that's made out of, you know, hand hewn wood. And then there's the money that comes up there that's coming from out of town. The money is generally not produced there. It's generally brought and transported. So,
Are they still doing, I mean, logging was like a massive industry up there. Is that still going on?
It was when in the 90s, it seemed like for some reason, this spotted owl issue. I remember that back when the Bill Clinton was elected, that he doubled down on the spotted owl being an endangered species, and it liked to live in dead trees. It had to die of their own accord, you know, after hundreds of years and fall down, and that's the only place they could live. And so logging, it basically died because of that. And in Canada, where we get most of our wood after that, you know, apparently the spotted owl doesn't care if the tree dies naturally and falls down. Because when you're doing logging, you're not taking every tree, and a lot of trees that are taken are cut or broken down in the process of logging. They're still going to rot out, and they're still going to create hollows and stuff for animals. And the population of the animals is actually much healthier, as well as everything else, you know, the fire suppression and everything else, when it's being maintained with human intervention, than it is just by being left naturally to grow up a bunch of underbrush until a big firestorm hits with a lightning strike. But the government comes in, intervenes, stops the production of lumber. And then not only do the disease of trees spread much more quickly, but the animals decline. The money into the forestry industry declines because there's no more hunting licenses and fishing licenses, and the lumber industry is not contributing to it. So it kind of just stagnates. That's you know, the fingerprint of the government.
Absolutely. Snuffs out.
Yep. I was just in Montana, and we were hunting, and the guy we were hunting with was saying that, you know, people are moving in from out of state and then lobbying against hunting in Montana. And that it's every year it's a threat. It's a threat on the ballot to limit hunting or eliminate hunting. And it's all from these transplants that move there and think that it's horrible and killing and everything like that. But, what people forget to understand is that a natural death in the wild is a horrible, horrible death. Yeah. Not one that you would ever want for anyone you loved.
Yeah.
You know, it usually involves months and months of starvation, pain, some cases being eaten alive, partially eaten and left. And then you're trying to go about your day with, you know, three of your four legs gone, but you didn't quite kill you yet. I mean, it's horrible, not to mention the overpopulation, overcrowding. And so then you have these older, bigger animals competing for food with younger, thriving animals. And so hunting actually maintains the health of the herd, of the wildlife, because it's controlled. It's controlled. I got drawn yesterday.
Oh, really? Congratulations.
In Idaho.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Up or near what?
Limhi?
Uh-huh.
Does that sound familiar? I know nothing about Idaho.
No, I haven't heard of it.
But I have a brother-in-law there who lives there, and he's a big hunter, and so he told me what areas to pick, and so I got drawn up there for deer. They list on there how many non-resident tags are available in that area. So it's and it's like 72, and I always thought, what? Why not 75, 70? It's a very specific number. And that's because when we were hunting in Arizona, we have to file at the end of the hunt, we have to file a report. What animals did we see? How many did we see? Mm-hmm. How big were they? Did we see any other animals? Did you see any turkeys? Did you see any pigs? Did you see any deer? So they're gathering all these reports, and then from that, they're able to estimate the population of the species, and then determine next year how many tags we're going to give so that they keep the species at kind of a manageable level. Hmm. So it's kind of like,
how honest are you?
There's on only those so much land
reports.
What's
like,
that?
How honest are you on those? Like, are the hunters being honest? Or are they being like,
this is my first,
I saw, I was like, I don't, 15,000 deer this year.
Yeah.
Wild.
So next year, there's a ton. Look how many tags there are. We all got tagged. So, but you know, there's only so much land. There's only so much food. And so it's the same for people. You know, there's only so much. And then eventually you saturate an area and then you stagnate or you have to bring in resources and animals can't do that. So to maintain the health of the animal, you got to keep them under control.
So did you get something up there in Montana?
Yeah, we were duck and geese hunting.
Oh.
Which was fun. That was fun.
So remember.
That's tough. That's like skeet shooting compared to.
Yes.
Like a steel target.
It's so cool. And the guy that we were hunting with, he has it down. I mean, he's the duck and goose, the waterfowl whisperer. But, yeah, it was really cool. And it's so fun because you go out, you know, 4 a.m. or whatever it is before the geese, they sleep on the river. They float in like a big flotilla on the river. And that's where they sleep. And so you want to get out to, in this case, cornfields before they wake up and set up your fort, your blind, you know. But it was cool because it was like building a fort when we were kids. You know, we built this stuff and we'd prop these corn stalks up and then step back and, oh, I can see through there. So let's cover that up because if they see that, they won't land. And then you set up all these decoys. The guy had just a trailer of different kinds of decoys for ducks and geese and everything. And you're putting those out to make it look like, here's the party, guys. Yeah. So when you're flying over, look.
These ducks are happy.
Yeah, these ducks are happy. They're eating. You know, look at these pretty girl ducks. You know, come down. Come down. And they're so cool. They look like a squadron of, like, fighter jets coming in. And they circle 3 or 4 times. They're scoping it out. They're checking out the party, looking for guys like us, you know, looking for danger. And you can't look at them. If you turn your head up and they see face and eyes,
wow,
they're gone. So you're looking down. There's just one guy looking up. And he's calling, you know, doing the duck calls and everything, or the geese calls or whatever it is. And they circle around. And then, yeah, just like jets, they kind of circle. And each circle, they get a little lower and a little lower and a little lower. It's just the coolest thing. I mean, it's really neat. And then they kind of come in and they do this formation, which they call hugging the pumpkin. And it looks like they're wrapping their wings like around a big pumpkin. They kind of take on this circular because they're kind of coasting in. And then when they get to about 10 or 12 feet off the ground, okay, boys, and you pop up and you take them out. And
because that's the point of no, they can't take off again in flight.
It's a little more difficult for them because they're on a downward trajectory. And so they have to really work to get back up. You know, they're big birds. They're 10, 15 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of stuck there. And it's just like the game Duck Hunt. They're just kind of looking at you like, oops, you know? And so it's pretty cool. And then it's kind of like fly fishing in a way where you're fooling them. Mm-hmm. You know, you've tricked them. You successfully tricked these 8 geese to come in and come down. And so it was fun. And then duck hunting is kind of the same thing, but it's kind of on the river or on the water. And it was a good time.
So what do you do with them after you bag these geese? And what is the limit? You get 5?
You get 5. You can get, there's different limits for different species. We got 5 each is kind of the limit. But then there's rules about bonus ducks or bonus geese.
Oh, yeah?
So you can actually get a little more than 5, which I think is just a little bit of leeway in case you
accidentally hit
2 or something like that. But
well, do the different species like hang out with each other?
So
you
do.
You could blast a whole flock.
Yeah, so you'll have these kind of Canadian geese, and then mixed in there will be some snow geese, which are the all white ones. And then there'll be ducks in there too. So there'll be mallards kind of hanging out. But kind of the ducks kind of stay together. The geese kind of stay together. But they'll kind of all fly together. And it's pretty incredible. I have video of kind of just these thousands, just flying overhead, and they're loud, and you can just hear them. And they're a couple hundred feet in the air, but they sound like they're right, you know, next to you, just barking and doing their thing. And then, so then once you gather them, we took them back to a friend's shop, and he has what's called a duck plucker, and it's this machine, right? Adam's getting excited.
Yeah.
So
I'm listening.
Yeah, because if you had to pluck them by hand, that would be a lot, you know. So there's 7 or 8 of us times 5, so there's 35, 40 birds you have to pluck. That's a lot. And sounds this like thing is just this wheel with, like, these rubber fingers on it.
Duck plucker?
Yeah. With these rubber fingers on it. And it just kind of spins around.
I see him at Harbor, or not Harbor Freight, Cal Ranch.
Yeah, well worth the investment if you're into waterfowl hunting. It's well worth it because it'll pluck a duck or a goose in, you know, seconds.
Do they use the same thing for chickens?
I was just going to ask that.
You could use it for chickens,
yeah,
I think.
I think
that's why it's at Cal Ranch.
They're pretty common. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you can... Yeah, and they're cool. And then you hook a shot back up to the back of it, so there's no, all the feathers get sucked away. You're not cleaning up a big old mess. But so then we plucked them, and then you dress them, you take them apart, quarter them, freeze them, bring them home. We brought home.
Is there any like
100 pounds of duck and goose?
Cheat ways to make the feathers come off easier. Like there's a lot of chicken
stuff. I think you dip them in hot water or
something like that, or you.
Then it comes off.
Dance around 3 times or something.
Get yourself a duck plucker. It's
okay. You duck plucker.
Yeah. It's the way to go.
Have you ever plucked a chicken?
Yeah.
Do you eat your chickens? Any broilers in the flock?
I have. It wasn't tasty. I don't know. I'm not a very good cook.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Parents, tired of conversations that go nowhere?
How was your day?
Fun.
With conversation starters from parenting.org, you can turn fine into finding help.
If you could change anything about your day, what would it be?
My friends, Emily and Piper, they won't talk to me. It's like I'm not even there.
Text CONVO to 51550 for weekly conversation starters and connect more with parenting.org from Boys Town.
The 32nd annual, highly anticipated Yuma Home and Garden Show returns to the Yuma Civic Center January 16th through the 18th with hundreds of displays, the latest in home improvement, and come see what's new. Compare, shop, and save with show-only prices. Visit with the experts and get all your gardening questions answered in the Garden Club showroom. Win cash in the cash machine, along with other prizes. Don't miss the fun January 16th through the 18th at the Yuma Civic Center.
El Dorado Broadcasters and this station congratulate the newest Yuma County Chamber of Commerce members. Special Olympics, Las Lavas, Gentiva Hospice, True Med Aesthetics, Fostering Hope, Yuma, Daniel Dorn, and Raw Aesthetics and Performance. If you'd like to find out how you can become a member and join all the benefits membership brings, email Ashley at yumachamber.org. That's Ashley at yumachamber.org or call 928-782-2567.
I always tell people I was the luckiest guy in the world. I wanted to be an army man or a fireman, and I got to do both. As a firefighter, my job was about saving lives. I never thought one day I would be fighting for mine.
After spending his career answering the call to save others, Ken was diagnosed with ALS. Now he's facing his biggest battle, for more time. For 70 years, Muscular Dystrophy Association has been answering the call to help people live longer and more independent lives.
MDA means to me hope.
MDA is leading the way for people living with ALS, muscular dystrophy, and other neuromuscular diseases by accelerating research, advancing care, and advocating to empower families like Ken's.
I wouldn't be living as good of a life with ALS if it wasn't for MDA. MDA is helping people live stronger and love longer. Learn more at MDA.org today.
As we wonder why school shootings keep happening, someone is lashing out at loved ones. As we argue about legislation, someone is posting threats on social media. As we continue to mourn the loss of innocent lives, someone is planning the death of more. Knowing the signs is the best way to prevent gun violence. Learn the signs at sandyhookpromise.org.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
And so we had a couple, there were these guinea hens.
Yeah, I remember that. They're so loud.
Yeah, they're annoying. Super loud. They're like a mix between a turkey and a chicken, and they squawk like a barking dog at you, and it's really annoying, and you can't catch them. So anyways, we were thin in the flock, and we took out a couple of these guinea hens and dressed them out and ate a couple bites of them, and couldn't do it. Like, I don't know if it was just the smell of dressing them out that was just stuck in my nostrils, but it tasted exactly like their guts. And yeah, they were cooked. We cooked them over a campfire. We're trying to do it, you know, legit style. And I just added a little bit of garlic salt, and they were not good. In fact, it cured me of wanting any chicken for about a week or two.
Really? Wow. Chicken's underrated, I think, as far as
meat. Versatile meat.
You kind of just say chicken, like, oh, we're going to have chicken. Eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think there's a lot that goes into it, to making them nice and plump and juicy. Sure. And of course, you not participating in the whole processing of them, I think, helps. Because when you see what goes on and smell, that taints
it. It's not attractive.
No.
You know, and there's a lot of mess. You know, it's just not. You know, when we're done, we have these nice, clean duck legs, duck breasts, and all that. But there's a whole bunch more duck off to the side, you know.
It's pretty greasy, too, right? It's a greasy
duck
type
is,
of fowl.
Well, I wouldn't use the word greasy, but ducks, very, waterfowl's very fatty.
Yeah.
Because they live in very cold, you know, you sleep in a cold, half-frozen river. So you got to be pretty insulated. So the duck has a lot of fat. But you can render that out, but it is a dark meat. So it's like the whole duck is like chicken thigh.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a dark meat. It's almost red like beef, you know, but I love it. It's one of my favorites, and that's why I love it. 'Cause it's very fatty, but it's kind of all worked in. It's not like you get like a big chunk of fat.
No,
like a steak.
No, right.
You know, but it's very tender. Some people like it. Some people don't like it.
Why don't they like it? You think because
I think
because
of that
gamey, kind of gamey.
Yeah, and it's all on how you cook it. Probably like the chicken that we had. You know, I'm sure that somebody that knew their way around a kitchen could cook the guineas up that would taste delicious. I mean, lobster, the same thing. You eat lobster without preparing it correctly.
Yeah,
it's just going to taste nasty.
Slimy,
but
and gross.
You know, you prepare it and it tastes like butter and garlic, and that's
that's interesting. I bought several cookbooks. By a game Hank Shaw, and one is Duck Duck Goose, and it's all duck and goose recipes. And then I bought one Buck Buck Moose, which is all elk, moose recipes.
This Hank guy, man, he's got
it. Oh, it was pretty clever.
It's super clever.
Super clever. And I wonder which book was first. I'll need to look up which book was first, but probably Duck Duck Goose. And then he came to the publisher with his next book. It was like, okay, I want to go with all wild game.
Yeah, we're getting crazy.
What are we going to call this? And he's like, well, the first one was Duck Duck Goose.
Yeah.
We just have to change three letters. And we got Buck Buck Moose. But yeah, I thought it was pretty clever. I would have bought it just for that.
Exactly.
But the recipes are really good. We made our first elk recipe from our elk that my wife harvested in November. And it was good.
I like the word harvest. It makes it sound very civil.
That's the word they use. That's what it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're harvesting.
You didn't gun it down in the prime of its life. You harvested it.
No, we harvest it, and we harvested so well, I had to buy another freezer to store the harvest.
Uh-huh.
We worked through it.
Yeah, and what about the head that you harvested?
That's being taxidermied.
Uh-huh.
Is it really?
Yeah. My wife got a trophy elk.
Yeah, I saw it. It was gigantic.
It could hang on the wall in Sprague's. It's
beautiful.
It's beautiful. And so I suggested a European mount, which is just the skull and the mm-hmm. and the antlers. Mm-hmm. And my wife said, no, I want the whole thing. Because it was beautiful. It was like golden blonde and
mm-hmm. yeah.
nice elk. The antlers are very charcoal, almost black because of where it lived. So it was different than other elk in the area.
It was up in near Flagstaff?
It was, it was up near there. But this elk had come down from much higher up because they take on their antlers, take on the color of the trees that they rub against. And wow. So the antlers of the ones in the Flagstaff area are a different color than the ones in the that are higher elevations where there's different kinds of pines and things like that. And so they estimated this elk had come down 40, 50 miles trek to get to where it was. And it was hanging around with another bull when she took it. And then the hunting guide that we were with was also guiding another hunter from Yuma at the same time. And so when we found our bull, it was with another bull. And so our guide called their guide and said, hey, there's two over here. We're going to go after one. They hadn't seen one in 3 days. We saw ours 20 minutes into the hunt.
Oh, no way.
Our whole hunt was under an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, it was incredible. They, made sure to tell my wife, this is not how it goes. You're spoiled. Don't expect this. If you come again, don't expect this. But yeah, they picked us up, and 20 minutes later, she was taking a shot.
Wow.
Yeah, it was.
How many shots did it take?
She fired 8, hit 6.
Whoa.
Yeah. These things are strong. These things do not go down. And so it would have gone down, and it did eventually. We just had to kind of keep an eye on it, and then it went down. But it was still trying to run, and so she did well. She shot well and did really well. But it wasn't like the...
So she didn't get like the elk fever? She wasn't all shaky and jamming the shells in the chamber?
Well, I was helping her with extra magazines when it was time to reload.
How many fits in the magazine? 5?
3.
3?
3. You can do 3 or 5. There's some rule for that, too. I need to probably read up on the hunting laws. But I think 5's the max mm-hmm. that you can have in the rifle, I think. But ours had 3. And then... it's about a 280-yard shot for the first shot.
That's a decent distance.
That's a long ways. So it was enough to not mortally wound it, but eventually it would have died. So then she took some other shots to help it go down. And then it took off. And so we had to jump back in the truck and go chase it down. And at one point we probably could have run it over, cause it ran right across the highway.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so right in front of us, and had he floored it more, we probably could have just hit it.
Yeah.
And the other bull stayed with it, which was shocking
when that happens.
Yeah. Cause if I'm with you and you get shot, I'm not staying with you. I'm running.
Mm-hmm.
And this bull just hung out there. Mm. And waited for these other Yuma hunters to get there. And then they took their bull. Same kind of thing, though. They hit it, and then it took off. And then you have to go find it. And.
Then what? So how do you...
How hard is it to find it? Because you're not seeing it the entire time, right? You're having to track it.
Right. It's amazing how they disappear. Amazing. Because mm-hmm. they're huge. They're huge. And Rachel's was golden yellow, like blonde. But even so, if he decided to just... turn a certain way, he's gone.
Right.
You won't see him. So there is a little trail of blood, so you can kind of follow that. And then we could always see him because he was injured enough that he couldn't go very far without stopping and going, wow, I need to slow down. Mm-hmm. So we always kind of had an eye on him, but he wouldn't let us get. Like when he knew that we were kind of climbing up close to him, he would move again and try to get behind, a bunch of brambles or branches or whatever and hide. And they disappear. It's pretty incredible that this several hundred pound, 7 foot tall creature can just disappear.
Right.
They did.
And they're quiet.
Super quiet.
That was my question. So now you find it, you come up on it, it's massive. What do you do? I mean, do you harvest right there to a certain extent?
So we right there. So right there, you make sure that he's gone, right? And then our guide, you know, I helped, and our guide, you field dress it right there, you know. So they, you skin it, you take the head, you carve out all the, and we took all the edible meat. It was pretty crazy, you know. Just
you left the skin.
We have the skin. When you do a full head mount, you have to leave what's called the cape. You have to leave a pretty big amount of skin so that they can use it to wrap and then use it for patching and things like that. But they, but yeah, when we were done, we, you know, we quartered it, legs and all of that. That's a good amount of the meat is right there. And then, you know, carving out the ribs. I wanted the whole ribs and turn it into like racks of ribs. A lot of times they'll just carve the rib meat out, leave the ribs. But then, so then you leave there, just all the inedible portion. And then that, the animals will come get that.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, it, you know, and pretty quick. I mean, you can, we field dressed that thing in under an hour, you know, and if he was with experienced hunters, it probably would have been quicker.
Was he like teaching you as you went along?
Kind of. Yeah. This is why I'm doing this. And I was asking, you know, I'm inquisitive. I want asked a lot of questions, you know, why are you doing this and why not this and all that. And he had reasons for everything, you know, it's what they do, you know, so he's the expert. But
is the meat spoil or something? If you do it.
If you cut the wrong thing, you can get, you know, the fluids of, and some of it'll either ruin the meat or then you have to like do other things to the meat to salvage it. So you want to be careful. You don't want to just go in there and hack away cause you'll ruin it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, you need to be pretty quick. You know, you want to do it while it's.
Were you just using a knife? Did you have a sawzall? What were you using?
And then at one point we had a hacksaw for the ribs and stuff. Cause you're cutting through the bone. So, but yeah, it was very, very interesting to see. And, you know, you try to put yourself in kind of our ancestors' position. Like, this is how they got their food.
Yeah.
You know, the grocery store didn't exist really until, you know, much later, early for us, right? Probably sooner rather than later for us, the grocery store, the idea of going to the store and getting your food. Before that, it was you grew your chickens, you harvested them, you'd go hunting and you might get a deer or something like that. Or you'd have, you know, herd of cattle and you'd slaughter one. And this was daily life, you know, for these people. And so it was really, you know, neat to see. And you kind of connect with that part of you that is kind of, we all have
primitive.
It. Primitive. Yeah, it's very primitive. It's very primitive, but, you know, in a good way. You know, so we came out of there with 350 pounds of meat that'll feed us for a long, long time.
So did it take you several trips to pack it back and like to go back and get the rest of the meat?
No. So fortunately, well, you have the meat, the game bags, which are like a fabric cloth bag that has that allows it to breathe and everything. But then he was able to bring his vehicle in pretty close to us. And so we were able to just load it into there.
A truck?
Yeah, a 4Runner.
So another person came.
No. That was our guy.
That was your guy.
That was our guide. So he was able to bring his car around.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to load all this quartered and cut meat into there. Put the head on the top. And you do the triumphant drive through town. He actually had also gotten, lucky with a tag. So because he was able to finish our hunt so early, he was able to go out and he got one of his own later that day. He texted me a picture, a big old monster, bigger than Rachel's. So anyway, he took us back to our cabin. We unloaded everything into my truck. Then you drive over to a processor. There's a whole bunch of business surrounding hunting. Then you drive over to a processor. In this case, we went to Casey's in Flagstaff, and they're a well-known processor because I asked around, you know, where should I take it? And you get in line. So it's hunting season. These places are open practically 24/7 during hunting season. And you get in line, and there's 8 or 9 or 10 trucks all with their hunt in the back. And then when it's your turn, you pull up to the bay. They have a big, you know, if it's a big animal, they'll, if you haven't quartered it or whatever, they'll do that there. We did ours in the field. So then they gather it all up and then ask you, you know, how much do you want in sausage? How much do you want in
burger,
you know, the burger, all that? Do you want us to mix beef fat in with the burger? And they ask you a bunch of questions. And then you kind of leave it all there, you know, and then you drive away. And then 2 weeks later, you get the call that your meat's ready. So then I had to drive back up and get it, bring it home.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
In tough times, it can be difficult to know where to turn. If you or someone you know is looking for help, the Yuma Community Food Bank is here if you need a hand. We provide food and other resources to families, seniors, and individuals in need. We are open Monday through Friday. All you need to receive a food box is a photo ID with your current address. Visit our website at yumafoodbank.org for more information. The Yuma Community Food Bank also accepts donations in the form of non-perishable food, monetary donations, and volunteer help. You can choose to donate or advocate. You can choose to volunteer or raise awareness. You can choose to help end hunger. Call us anytime, 928-343-1243. Visit our main campus, located at 2404 East 24th Street, or use our food locator map online at yumafoodbank.org.
Truckmates, Yuma's Fix Up Your Pickup Truck Store is Yuma's home for Snug Top shells and lids. Snug Top, designed and manufactured to the highest standard. Industry-leading quality and trend-setting design to protect and complement your vehicle. That's Snug Top. Truckmates is also the home of expert spray and bed liners, spraying mil-spec protective coatings, committed to unwavering excellence and unparalleled customer service. Expert liners, with available national warranty coverage and installed by Yuma's most experienced spray on team at Truckmates. Truckmates is also the home for BDS suspensions, the highest quality aftermarket suspension lift kits, leveling kits, and accessories for 4x4 off-road trucks and Jeep enthusiasts. And don't forget 3M window tinting, the originators of window tinting, with nationwide lifetime warranty at Truckmates. That's expert spray and bed liners, BDS suspensions, 3M window tinting, and Snug Top, all at Truckmates. 32nd Street, next to Lowe's.
From the personal experiences that shaped you to the accomplishments that shaped the world, every moment of a veteran's service is meaningful. At the Library of Congress Veterans History Project, we ensure those moments are never forgotten. For 25 years, the collection has made the experiences of U.S. military veterans accessible to all. Veterans, now is the time to share your story and make our history more complete. To submit your stories, photographs, and documents, visit loc.gov/vets today.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
So, and then, so we took the animal at like 7 in the morning and then went to the, quartered it, took it to the processor, then took the head to the taxidermist, who's also there almost 24/7 this time of year. She was actually a lady from our church, and we asked our guy, you know, should we call first? Is she going to be there? He's like, oh, she'll be there. So, but probably not from like 9 to 11 because she goes to church. So then we went there, and yeah, she's there, you know, and she's like, yep, bring it in. And there, if you haven't been to like a taxidermy place, that's wild. That's wild.
Wild or freaky?
Yes. So there's every kind of animal you can imagine in there, in every state you can imagine, you know, like just skinned, or there's big skins on the floor covered in salt. And they'll leave them like that for months and months and months. And then the salt, you know, pulls all the moisture out of it or whatever, but allows it to, the weight of the salt keeps it stretched out, you know? Mm. So, and then just on this roof is just hooks and hooks and hooks and just antlers and antlers and antlers of every animal you can imagine with antlers, you know. And then over here is a big bear, you know, or whatever. And, you know, she's just like, okay, put it there. Like, how do you keep these straight?
Yeah.
You know, and I, And our friends from Yuma had just dropped theirs off before us, you know, and I told her, I said, don't mix it up because ours is better. You know, I don't want, ours is better than Nathan's. I don't want Nathan's. So then, but yeah, she has a system and she knows where everything's at and everything. And then we went back. So we were back at the house sitting in the hot tub by 3 p.m. on the first day of the hunt. Yeah. And we were done. That was it.
Those types of professions, I think, are really underappreciated because the amount of skill that goes into, you know, getting all of the meat and processing it and making sure that the right amount of fat and however the sausage is made. Well,
and that's handled correctly, is to make you sick, and then packaged and wrapped correctly and
frozen
correctly.
Their whole reputation is based on if someone's going to get sick from the meat that they've processed. And you don't hear about anybody walking, oh, that's a nice, wealthy taxidermist right there. Or this guy knows how to really make some good sausage. But the product that we enjoy at the on the end of the assembly is like, you know, that's what we're sitting down to these fancy dinners for.
Right.
We never celebrate the whole process of them doing it or the learning that they went through. It's probably generational. It's probably some type of family that, you know, had done it before them.
I didn't ask her, but I assumed from the operation.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I'd call, she would
answer. It wasn't career day, you know, that they
decided. My bet is this is
what I want to be when I grow up.
Yeah. But it was really interesting because I thought about, okay, let's think about all the, from our one hunt. So we got the one tag, which we paid the state. So you've got the state agencies that benefit from that. We have the Airbnb we rented. So there's some money. While we were there, we ate and shopped and visited, you know, places and restaurants and things like that. So they benefit from our hunt. Then our guide benefited. He benefited really well because it was a 5-day hunt and it was done in 2 hours. So he benefited really well. So that supports him and his family. And that's a family operation. It's just dad and his boys.
Mm-hmm.
And then the processor, you know, you pay them to process the meat and do all that. Then the taxidermist and, you know, here at local Sprague's, we bought our ammo and got our gun sighted in and our scope and everything here. So, you know, all of that one animal generated all of that for all those families.
Mm-hmm.
And all those, except for maybe the federal government portion of it we're all family businesses that's what they do, you know, and their parents are there, kids are there, they're doing it. They're teaching their kids how to do it. They'll be hunting guides for generations off of these hunts from that one hunt that we did.
Yeah. The individuals that monitor the herds and make sure, you know, how big they are and how healthy they are and how many tags to issue, they're all paid from the fees that you're paying for the tags. Yeah. And so the hunters are really the ones that are generating the healthy animal population that's in the woods. And sometimes they get a bad rap for just wanting to go out and kill animals. But no, they actually have the bigger appreciation.
Right.
You can't appreciate really what's out there until you go out and try to find it and assimilate kind of with it, because you can't find it very, very well if you're not quiet and trying to figure out what its habitat is like and what it likes to eat and where it likes to hide. And you really gain an appreciation for how smart these animals are. They're not just like bumbling around, like eating whatever green brush is around them. They're extremely intelligent.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you say, their fur blends in perfectly with the environment. All of that is just, it's pretty majestic. The process.
It is. We learned a lot, and then you just feel really, even our short little spoiled hunt, you know, you just feel connected somehow to that area, to that animal, you know, to all of that. And so that's probably still in our DNA somewhere, where that's where we started, was doing that way. Probably, I haven't gotten into archery. That's probably even one step closer to the ancestors. But you know, it's not to sound cheesy or cliche or anything, but you know, it really connects you to those that came before, because you get an appreciation of how hard that life was. I mean, that life was difficult and not guaranteed. There's people that go on these hunts and come back with nothing. They see nothing. They don't take a single shot. Rocky, one of the guys that works for me, always give him a hard time because he hunts and he's, but he never seems to get anything. You know, for as long as he's worked with me, every hunt he comes back empty handed. Mm-hmm. I don't even know why he keeps going, but he keeps going. You know, I give him a hard time.
Yeah, that's called a hike.
What's that?
That's called a hike.
Yeah. Yeah. So he goes on a couple hikes a year.
Yeah.
But, you know, he loves it and he goes out and does it and it's a lot of fun. And he has gotten things in the past, just not since I've known him.
Mm-hmm.
And, but there, you know, it's hard. It's difficult.
Sorry, Rocky.
There's no guarantee. These animals move. Mm-hmm. These animals, just like you say, are intelligent and maybe they saw you coming before you ever saw them and they're gone. You know, so it's just really, really cool and neat. And then, it connects you to that. And then, like I mentioned before, you know, a death in the wild is gruesome. You know, none of us would want a natural death in the wild. You know, they don't just go to sleep. You know, it's a lot of pain. It's a lot of torture. You know, it's terrible. And so you can take this animal, you can give it a good death. It's, you know, they're, you can't shoot them below a certain size. So, you know, that this animal has likely increased the population, has lived its life, it's partied, it's, you know, it's done well. And now we're going to take it and then it'll be honored in our family for, you know, for years and generations. And then the memories that we have of it and, you know, of our interaction with it. So yeah, you know, and then when you walk up on it, you know, you just kind of feel like just said, you know, it's just majestic, you know, and when you touch it for the first time, you know, it's very, you know, sobering moment. Hmm. So it's not something that you just go out there and let's just fire off into the distance. And if we hit something, you know, or whatever. And my mom always raised us we never hunted. This was my first hunt. I didn't even hunt. My wife hunted. I watched. This is my first hunting watch. And, my mom always raised us that, you know, we don't do that. You know, we never hunted. We never went shooting birds. We never went shooting rabbits or anything like that. Cause life is precious and
God's creatures.
Yeah. God's creatures. And I believe that legitimately. It's something that you have respect for it. You take it mm-hmm. seriously. So it's unfortunate that some people don't, you know, cause it makes it difficult for everyone else that does.
We interviewed a couple ladies from the local hunting club and
dove hunters.
They were explaining the same experience. Like it's almost like a spiritual experience when you connect like that with this animal that you mean, it gets such a bad rap.
It's very religious.
Yeah,
for sure. It has that same type of vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
With other hunters too, there's a respect that everybody understands.
And it should. I think if you're doing it right.
And the animals. It should. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it should. So even when we were shooting the waterfowl, the geese and the ducks, you know, you respect them. Those things are awesome. You know, it's not just some dirty bird out there just making a mess. You know, you look at them, you feel them, you touch them, you feel the weight of them. You know, this is a living thing. You know, this is...
You see their beak and their feathers and how intricate it is. And
well, and you think about... So when I got home back to Yuma and right here, Colorado River is one of the premier waterfowl hunting spots in Arizona. I didn't know that. So I got back and I looked up like, oh, where can you do them here? And so getting back, I was seeing these squadrons of these geese, you know, flying in. I thought, how cool would that be if some of these geese flew over us when we were in Montana? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just the miles these things cover, what they see, you know, and everything is just impressive. It's like you say, it's majestic to think that this creature is now here in the Colorado River. And a few months ago it was in Canada, you know, and it's made its trek all the way down here and it survived being shot at all the way down here. You know, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
So what was the highlight and low light of the whole process? The highlight, of course, is potentially...
The highlight's actually getting one.
Yeah.
That's always a question.
The adrenaline.
Yeah.
Right there and then.
Yeah. And that hit... I mean, I didn't even take the shot and that hit me. You know, mm-hmm. You kind of feel this like rush of emotion. And for Rachel, it was much more dramatic because she actually took the shot. So, you know, that rushed over her and it was emotional, you know? And so, and still just last night she was telling me, yeah, I was just thinking about it, you know, and, you know, gets, you know, you've that little bit of emotion will always be there.
Yeah, but what emotion are you talking about? Like I just took a life or
all of it,
more like
all of it. It's a adrenaline rush. It's a, you know, buck fever, just like they say. You're excited to actually see one. In my life, I've probably only seen elk in the wild 3-4 times, you know, so it's, you know, to actually see one and then connect with it and harvest it and do all that, top to bottom is an emotional experience. You know, it's special.
Yeah.
I think it should be special.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, you know, that's the highlight of all that. The low light, funny enough, I'm grateful that we got one. I'm disappointed that we got one so quick.
Oh.
Because I invested a lot into this hunt and the gear and everything else that it takes. Mm-hmm. It's not easy and it's not inexpensive. You know, gathered for a year, I'm watching every sale. I'm watching every clearance. I'm watching all, oh, we need that, you know, underlayer and all this stuff. Because I was expecting 4 or 5 days out in the frigid cold. You know, we had 20 minutes in the truck. You know, so it was, I was kind of like, well, shoot, you know, I could have done this, you know, pretty easy.
In your jeans, you know, and t-shirt.
So now we're all set up. So now I'm looking for any hunt I can go on because now I've already invested into the infrastructure, you know, so now let's go. So I was elated and also at the same time disappointed that it was so quick.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great for us because it was our first time, it was our first foray into it. And had we gone 3 or 4 days and not seen anything or even come home empty handed, I'm not sure we'd be jumping to go again, you know? So as the highlight and the low light was probably, you know, getting one, but then getting one so quick.
Okay. That's it for today.
Always a pleasure.
Appreciate it, guys. Good to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We still can say it, right? What's the date today?
The 7th.
Okay. I think we're right at the limit.
Okay.
I think it's 7 days after New Year's. You have to stop saying it.
One of my favorite meals is elk. I just forgot. Gosh, it's with noodles and sauce.
Oh, stroganoff?
Stroganoff.
Stroganoff.
Elk stroganoff. That is one of my favorite meals.
Let's do it. Actually, real quick, shout out to Juliana's. Their stroganoff that Chef Eddie does at Juliana's here locally, it's fantastic. Go get yourself some.
Okay.
It's good. You don't often see stroganoff on a menu.
Yeah, you don't.
So I was hesitant.
That's interesting.
But it's fantastic. So shout out, Chef Eddie.
I will take your word for it.
Thanks, Chris, for coming in.
Thanks, guys.
Always a pleasure.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
You know your business needs to get in the digital game, marketing on the internet, and maybe finally fixing your website. Don't let the world pass you by. Go to YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. They're part of the Desert Southwest's largest media company, and their team has executed thousands of digital marketing campaigns across the country. Digital campaigns for businesses just like yours. Who knew they needed to get in the game? YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. Don't let the world pass you by.
Moving Day. A walk for Parkinson's is more than just a walk. Moving Day is a fun experience that unites the community in the fight against Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's doesn't stop, and neither will we. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register for an event in your area at movingdaywalk.org. That's movingdaywalk.org.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU Eldorado Broadcasters LLC nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.